The Gem City Sports Network presents GCSN Reports. Tonight's show is being brought to you by Profiler Performance Products, by Don Brown Sports Apparel, a big league look for a minor league price, by McAfee Heating and Air, any season, any time, McAfee, by Profiler Inc., by the USO, by a Special Wish Foundation of Dayton in southwestern Ohio, by the USO, and by Darren Dollar Music, and by the Gem City Sports Network, your source for local sports in the Miami Valley, the Gem City Sports Network. And now, here's your host, Doug Brown. And good evening, everybody, and welcome to this edition of GCSN Reports. My name is Doug Brown, and today we are talking to someone who has been in the news for a very long time, and she's been an anchor for WHIO for a very long time, and we're talking about Cheryl McHenry. And Cheryl, thank you for coming on and doing this.
Well, Doug, thank you for having me. Good evening, everybody. I'm happy to be with you. You and I have corresponded a lot over the years, and we've met, and I know you're very passionate about local sports. As I am too, you know, I'm a big sports fan as well as a news buff. So it's great to be with you and your listeners.
What did you know, about how old were you when you knew that you wanted to become a newscaster?
I'd say I was about 15. I was probably a sophomore at Carroll High School, and I had started hearing more women's voices on the radio doing news, doing commercials, even being DJs, and I was very intrigued by it, thinking that seems really cool. And I also think this was the early 1970s. There were more women showing up on TV news. You know, I remember Connie Chung and Leslie Stahl and women like that, and even women locally like Connie Lockwood and Judy Hauk working for WHIO. And it appealed to me because I was interested in news. I always read the newspaper when I was even as a kid because my parents did, and watched the evening news and used to see my dad watch Walter Cronkite with a furrowed brow during the Vietnam War, and thought, well, this must be very important because my dad is paying a lot of attention to this. And I just thought I'd always liked to talk. I liked my speech class in high school. I liked to write, and it just appealed to me on many levels, and that's when I first became interested in getting into broadcasting.
Did you take journalism in high school?
I did. I had Sister Mary Alice Stein from my journalism teacher junior year, and she was very good. You know, we mainly wrote newspaper-type articles. We didn't really write for TV news, which is different, as you know, radio and TV.
Right.
Different, you know, radio tends to be more for the listener's ear, whatever will catch their attention, short sentences. TV is much the same, although in TV we try to write more to video. With newspaper, you know, you write for the reader, and one advantage newspaper has is that people can go back. If there's a lengthy sentence or something they didn't quite catch the first time, you can go back and reread it. Usually when people are listening to radio or watching TV, they don't have that advantage unless they want to play it back or go to the website and investigate. A lot of times people aren't going to take that time to do that. So, we did write in newspaper format and even ended our articles with that little 30 at the end. You know? But, I took journalism and I enjoyed it.
Now, where'd you go to college?
I went to the University of Cincinnati.
Home of the Bearcats.
I'm a bear. Yes, yes. I'm technically a Bearcat, although I got to tell you, I mean, I do root for them in football when they get into, you know, the championship games, but I tend to be more of a Buckeye football fan.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I don't know. Just because they've been better over the years, and my husband went to Ohio State, and one of our daughters went to Ohio State, and it's just a lot of fun, the atmosphere. And when I was at UC, again, 100 years ago, Nippert Stadium was, you know, not what it is today, and the football program wasn't as good. In fact, they were very big in basketball then, and I was more interested in the UC basketball team back then, but remember my, I guess it would have been my junior year, I was all excited, 1977, Bearcats were in the NCAA tournament, and I thought, okay, my roommate and I hunkered down, I think, with a pint of Grater's ice cream, and we were going to watch this game. and then they lost to Marquette, of all teams. And do you know, Marquette went on to win the whole thing under Al McGuire as coach. Right. So there was some redemption in that at the end of the and at the end of March Madness, that at least they had lost to the championship team. But I've become a huge Dayton Flyers basketball fan, in my adult life, just because it's so exciting to go to the arena. Right now I think the world of Coach Grant and some of the players, and I get frustrated like every sports fan does about the transfer portal and people leaving and people coming in, and it's not like it used to be, but then really nothing is anymore. So you kind of have to just evolve. But I do root for Flyer basketball, Buckeye football, love the Bengals, the Reds. Just an all-around sports fan, and I'll get on the bandwagon for any local team that does well. So I'll just say that right now.
Are you excited that that UD and UC are renewing their basketball?
That's great. Yes, I am. I think that's wonderful. For years it was the UD Xavier rivalry, and then that fell off the map. And no, I think it's great that UD and UC are going to play again, and we'll see how that one turns out. But I think it's wonderful. It's great for Southwest Ohio and all the local basketball fans here.
Yeah, I think this is my thinking, and I've said this to a few people. I think UD, Wright State, Miami, Xavier, and UC should play all the time in basketball.
Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be great.
That would be a dream. I think that would be wonderful. I can remember UD playing Miami in basketball back in the 80s and being at a game and getting pretty worked up about it. I think UD pulled that one out, but it was close.
I'd like to see UD and Wright State play just for the heck of it,
That would be great, yeah. Cross City Jam.
Yeah.
So Cross Town Jam.
Yeah. That would be awesome. Now you said you went to Carroll. Did you go to a lot of the sporting events over at Carroll?
I did. I was on the drill team, actually. I was a Liberty Bell my junior and senior years, yes, in our red, white, and blue Patriot uniforms and our tri-cornered hats, and really took a lot of pride in it, really loved it. And so, yes, we performed at all the football games and basketball games, at least the home ones, so, and did some competitions. So, yeah, I did go. And then my older brother, Mark, was a wrestler. He was a pretty good wrestler. He's 2 years older than me. In fact, so I'd go to a lot of his wrestling matches, even though it pained me to watch him wrestle because, the grimace, and it's such a one-on-one grueling sport.
Right.
And, I found it kind of hard to watch. But I have to tell you quickly about my brother Mark's claim to fame. He found out years later that he'd run cross country to get in shape for wrestling. And one of his friends, Mark Gerhard, who was also big in the wrestling community, and Mark passed away last year, but Mark Gerhard had done some research, and he informed my brother, Mark McHenry, guess what? You beat Edwin C. Moses.
Oh, really?
Sophomore year in cross country. Yeah, because I guess Moses ran cross country to get in shape for track season. So he wasn't really a distance runner, he was a hurdler,
right.
Champion hurdler. So I said, wow, that's really cool, Mark.
Really?
That you can say you beat Edwin C. Moses. Yeah. Yeah.
So in your
trivia.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
I was talking to Brittany McGraw, and I said, I told when I did this show with her,
mm-hmm.
I said that she is an answer to a trivia question. And
Brittany is?
Yeah, Brittany is. Who was the last person to do a newscast at the old building on 1414?
Brittany McGraw.
That's right. And the first one to do
it
over.
Sunday night.
And to do the first one over at the new building.
Okay, I didn't know she was the first one to do it, because I thought the last one was a Sunday night in December of 2010, and she was our weekend anchor then.
Right.
So I guess I kind of assumed that the first one at the newer building
would have been
was,
you.
Whoever did the morning.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Did the morning newscast,
right.
Whoever it was in 2010. Maybe John Paul and, Natasha Williams.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, that's a, I'll write that one down too, and I'll bring that up at my next cocktail party time.
Now, you've covered a lot of events. And what is your most, what story will you remember the most, whether it's good or bad?
Gosh, that's a good question. You know, I've covered so many stories over the years. You know, some of the highlights, I guess I would say, and I don't know that there's any one thing that I would remember the most. I know in 2012, we did a half hour special, called Invisible Wound, and it was about our returning military veterans who, were dying by suicide. And I became interested in it because, first of all, the stat alone, I found very troubling. You know, my dad was in the Air Force for 20 years, and luckily he never saw any combat. Well, an Air Force usually doesn't, but there were, you know, a returning young men from Iraq and Afghanistan and women who at times were taking their own lives, and that stat was troublingly high. And then one morning I was driving down the street close to our house in Dayton, And I had walked my dog past this one house many times, and I noticed there was sort of a big rock or boulder out front that said Sergeant Fike on it. And I'd noticed he had some kind of military Marine decal on his pickup truck. And, you know, it had occurred to me that he was a Marine, former Marine. And then this particular morning in early 2012, it was January, and I remember seeing a woman being comforted by a man. She was standing at the end of the driveway crying, and he was comforting her. And I got curious, and I called somebody I know on the Dayton Police Department and said, so what happened over there? And I was told, the young man who lived there took his own life. And I found out his name. His name was Kurt Fike. And I found out who his mother was through his obituary. She lived in Hamilton, and I sent her a sympathy card. I didn't tell her I worked in TV. I just said, I'm so sorry about your son. I saw you that morning, and I just want you to know how sorry I am. It just really touched me, seeing her, you know, realizing her whole world at that moment had fallen apart. And then I knew somebody else, a couple who had at least the husband had graduated from Carroll High School. I don't know if his wife had, and same thing. They lost a son to suicide who'd been in the Army and had been deployed to Afghanistan, I believe. And I reached out to them as well. They didn't, you know, I spoke to the mother of that young man and, you know, kind of gave me some information behind the scenes. She didn't really care to take part. But the first woman, Jody Fike, wanted to talk about it. You know, and so we ended up doing a whole half hour special, focusing first on what happened to her son, how he'd suffered a TBI in Iraq, when a rocket exploded near him. Despite that, he was still sent back, for another tour. I think he actually did three tours in Iraq. And, you know, just, I don't even think he was aware. She certainly wasn't aware that he had suffered this traumatic brain injury. And, you know, of course, she was naturally very upset. He died just shy of his 30th birthday. And, but the point was not to just focus on those who were dying, but also to say, what can we do to help some of our military who really deserve our respect and our gratitude when they come back? Yet they come back to a country. I felt like at the time that here we are, we're watching American Idol, and we're, you know, sometimes we just don't fully appreciate what they do for us and what they're going through abroad. So I talked to Kathy Platone, the psychologist who has an office in Centerville. Dr. Platone herself has deployed voluntarily 4 times to Iraq and Afghanistan. She's been to Guantanamo Bay. She herself is a survivor of the Fort Hood massacre. She was there the day that Nidal Hassan shot and killed 13 people. Wow. And wounded others. And one of her best friends, Captain John Gaffney, died at her knees, and he bled out, and they tried to help him and couldn't. So as somber a topic as that was, I thought it was very important for us to focus on this and just let our veterans and their families out there know that we care and that there is help for them. And we also had a piece out of our Washington Bureau about efforts at, I believe it's at Walter Reed, to help those coming back from the combat zone. So to me, that was very, I was compelled to instigate that and work on it. And I worked on it with some other fine coworkers of mine, James Brown, Becky Grimes, Byron Sturzman. We all worked on it together, and I thought it turned out well. And you know, you always hope that it's helped somebody.
Oh yeah,
you know, along the way that somebody went, oh well, thank God that, you know, there's some attention to this, and we're not just being written off when we come home from the combat zone.
Yeah, sometimes we do stories that we don't know how it affects people, but sometimes in,
right,
you know, in the down the road, somebody will come up and say, hey, I heard you do this,
right,
and stuff like that. We really thank you for doing that.
Well, and I do hear that still about the tornadoes in May of, you know, Memorial Day 2019. I was on the air that night with McCall Brightags,
mm-hmm.
and then Dante
that.
Jones joined us later. You know, we had some fine reporters out in the field. Sean Cudahy went up to Salina, and with people all over the place as those tornadoes spawned. We had 15 of them that night, as it turned out later, but people will still make remarks. And it really wasn't me. It was McCall. I mean, she did a tremendous job that night, but you know, she had an emotional moment where I sort of picked it up. And I think I was able to, especially when Dante came in later that night, because he'd only been with us a few months at that point. When we could see the track of the tornado, I was familiar with a lot of it since I've lived around here so long. I knew where the big tornado that cut the swath, you know, from Brookville into North Dayton and Riverside. And then there was the F3 that hit Beaver Creek, and just very familiar with, those areas close to the base, the military housing, some of those developments out in Beaver Creek. And I knew mm-hmm. they were densely populated, and that this was a big concern. And, you know, we just kept hammering to people, please, please take cover, take this seriously. And I remember when McCall got emotional after that, she heard, especially from women, thank you for getting emotional, because that was the only thing that convinced my husband, my boyfriend, my significant other to go to the basement. I'd been trying to get him to go, and it wasn't until they realized, uh-oh, this is serious business, that
exactly.
You know, we better take cover. So that was something. And then, of course, I was on the air at 4 a.m. the morning of the Oregon District mass shooting, which is, we're coming up on 4 years for that, August 4th. And I got a call at 2:30 in the morning from our managing editor, and she said, at that point, we heard there were 7 dead. Turned out there were 9. And then the shooter, who the police did a valiant job of taking him down so he couldn't take any more lives that night. But, you know, 2019, I guess, was just a really big year, too,
right,
because of the things that happened. And then Dayton Police Detective George Del Rio was killed in the line of duty later that year in November. And I had known George because I used to cover the police department. And, you know, just being able to give him the honor and the credit that he deserved for his years of hard work. And George, he was just a solid guy, family man, you know, of Mexican heritage and spoke Spanish. And that helped so much. The task force that he worked on with the DEA, and he was very valuable there. And, you know, just, you know, one bad night and mm-hmm. he's lost to the department and to his family. So that, you know, I guess that all of 2019 kind of sticks out in my mind as a big, big year.
Well, okay, Cheryl, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Cheryl McHenry right after this.
Profiler Performance Products is an all-American manufacturer of racing cylinder heads and intake manifolds. From two-time drag week winner Jeff Lutz to the winningest bracket champions like Disco Dean Karn, Profiler Performance has become the overwhelming choice of drag racing's best-known name. Profiler Performance offers the absolute best bolt-on performance for cylinder heads and intake, utilizing their own in-house custom casting and CNC machining. For more information, visit ProfilerPerformance.com or find them on Facebook. Profiler Performance, they make power they haven't even used yet.
Hey sports fans, you all know Don Brown. He was born and raised here in the Miami Valley and have met many of you somewhere along the line as a player, coach, or sports broadcaster for WKEF and WRGT-TV. Sports has been a big part of his life and remains so today. So if your high school team, little league organization, or group wants to look good year-round, then look no further than Don Brown Sports. From Spirit Gear t-shirts, polos, or equipment embroidery, or screen printing, Don Brown Sports is your first and last stop. He's got big quality at minor league pricing. Feel free to get in touch with DB via email at dhkbrown1@gmail.com. Or feel free to call him at 937-430-3105. Don Brown Sports, a big league look for a minor league price. A Special Wish Foundation of Dayton has a new name. It is now a Special Wish Foundation Dayton and Southwest Ohio chapter. They now serve 20 counties in Southwest Ohio and work with families whose children are being seen at Dayton Children's and Cincinnati Children's Hospitals. The organization has granted over 1,800 wishes to those children battling life-threatening illnesses. To find out how you can help make a Special Wish come true, log on to their website, aspecialwishdayton.org, or call them at 937-223-WISH. A Special Wish Foundation is a 501c3, and all funds stay within the local community to support local children. Back here on GCSN Reports, we're here with news anchor from WHIO-TV, Channel 7, Cheryl McHenry. And Cheryl, you have worked with a lot of reporters and anchors and so forth. In your bio, you said you've worked with Jim Baldridge, Ken Jefferson, and now James Brown. Did you ever work with Don Wayne?
I did. I started at WHIO in August of 1981. August 10th is my 42nd anniversary.
Wow.
yeah, no applause, please. And so what Don and Jim were our main anchors then, and Don retired in early 88. So yes, I worked in the same newsroom with him. I don't know that I ever anchored a show with him. I know that I was on the news set with him and Jim because when I started, I was the night reporter. So I would do stories for the 11 and I would sit on the news set with them unless I was out live somewhere. So I did work with Don and, you know, had a lot of respect for the man. He, you know, came to work every day, never took off his suit jacket, even in the newsroom, sitting
really?
At his manual typewriter when the rest of us had electric typewriters. And, you know, and he was quiet, you know, he was sort of a quiet leader in the newsroom. But, you know, very solid, of course, and had the respect of everybody. I always think of him as our local Walter Cronkite because of his delivery and his tone and just his serious demeanor. Although you could get Don laughing, too, and every now and then something would tickle him and he would just, oh, he wouldn't stop. You know, he would just chortle away. So, yeah, I did get to work with the great Don Wayne.
Yeah, I've met him a couple of times when I was working at the bonded station over on Wilmington and Devon. He'd come in,
mm-hmm.
get gas,
yeah.
and stuff like that. And
yeah,
you know, and I always thought, oh, that's great, you know. He's been working here all his life at Channel 7.
Yeah.
And just like you, had been there for a long time. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, being in this business, somebody come up to me and says, hey, when are you going to get a real job?
Yeah, people still ask me that. No.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I get people saying, hey, what do you want to do when you grow up? I said,
yeah.
Hell, I'm
yeah.
not going to grow up.
Yeah, but, a lot of, well, that's the thing, Peter Pan.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, with you working with all these guys, you picked up a lot of knowledge from these guys too, right?
You know, I did. And I'm thinking about, okay, Baldridge. Baldridge, you know, and I just saw him a couple weeks ago. He was in town. It was so great to see him. And Jim Baldridge was one of the smartest, most well-read people that I've known. He knew about everything. I mean, you could bring up just any topic, and he could just expound on it, and not in a bragging way. He just knew a lot of stuff. He was just very well read, very smart, and retained a lot of what he knew. And his writing was, he was the original grammar police, because I can tell you if something's right or wrong grammar wise, like a little red flag goes off in my head. But with Jim, he knew, he could cite you the rules of grammar. So I learned an awful lot from Jim. And then somebody else that, you know, wasn't well known to people who just watched us was Denny Cheatham. I worked with Denny Cheatham, was one of our news videographers, photographers for many years. And Denny just passed away right before the pandemic started. He had retired by then. But I worked with Denny on the police and courts beat back in the 80s into the early 90s. And Denny just, you know, for whatever he lacked in book smarts, Denny was very street smart, very resourceful. He knew how to get news, and he was the first, he would hammer into me, keep it simple, stupid, you know, he would say. Or if we were approaching a crime scene, he goes, well, we do it first, and then we ask, or then we apologize. So basically, he was the old school where you just go up and you start shooting. The video is what I'm talking to, shoot the camera. And then if you get in trouble, you know, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that I impeded on this crime scene. But no, we were also respectful of crime scene tape and the police officers doing their job, but learned a lot just about, you know, dealing with those kinds of stories by working with Denny. He was just very, very street smart and resourceful, and just, you know, every now and then he didn't have a filter, so he did tend to tick people off, and sometimes I had to smooth things over, but you know, I really just learned a lot from working with Denny, and I'm eternally grateful to him. You mentioned Ken Jefferson. Ken was like, almost like a brother to me. You know, I anchored the old 9 o'clock morning news with him in the late 80s, and then the 5:30 news. And Ken, very funny, but a very good writer. I had a lot of respect for Ken, and, you know, Ken passed away also in early 2018 at 65 years old. So yeah, he was, you know, he had left here in 2002, and at the time of his death, he was anchoring morning news in Charlottesville, Virginia, and had a stroke and was gone 2 days later. Yeah, so that was really a shocking thing to have happen, because, you know, in my mind, Ken was always this boyish guy, you know, just having a lot of fun and enjoying life. So, you know, that was a shock. But, yeah, I've worked with so many great people. And, of course, James Brown. James, you know, works so hard, and he cares so much. And he's just so easy to get along with. And but he's truly a newsroom leader, too. When James says something, he's E.F. Hutton, you know, people listen, or they better.
One of those type guys.
Yeah, he is. But, you know, and it's because he cares. It's that old saying, Doug, that, you know, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And James does care very, very much, and wants us always to do our best. He always believes in raising the bar, raising the standard of what we do. And, you know, he comes back at it charging hard every day, and I try to do the same right along with him, as do many others. We have a lot of good people in our newsroom.
A few years ago, you were anchor a telethon, right? I can't remember the
Children's name. Dayton Children's. Yeah, I did that from 1987 to 2014, which was the last year that we aired it, because telethons kind of went by the wayside. Mm-hmm. You know, I know the AWHIO still does the radiothon, which has been very successful, but it was sort of a mutual decision between Dayton Children's and WHIO to not do it anymore. But yeah, 28 years did the telethon with Ted Ryan. Our third person sometimes switched out depending on, you know, who was working at the station. Towards the end, we had Nancy Wilson from K99 FM. Nancy did a great job, but that was always very rewarding. I remember when I started doing the telethon in the late 80s, like I said, I'd been the police and courts reporter, and I thought, well, I don't know how to ask for money. I'm not a salesperson, you know. But, you know, I realized it, when you see these kids who are sick or injured and have been hospitalized, and when you see their families, and it always seems to happen to the best families. I don't know what that is, but these wonderful families who have a child with a brain tumor or a heart condition and dealing with the stress of that, or a newborn baby who has issues and has to stay in the NICU for a long time. And first of all, it makes you appreciate your own children's health. And
exactly.
When I first started doing the telethon, I didn't have any kids yet. I found that to be very rewarding. And really the main thing about the telethon was to recognize groups and businesses and organizations locally that all year round were raising money for Dayton Children's. Because, you know, I think, and I'll give you my spiel here, but it really is true that a freestanding hospital like Dayton Children's that's not really associated with a university really, you know, it does take a lot of money to keep that state-of-the-art hospital and state-of-the-art equipment, I guess I should say, thriving in our area. It serves a big multi-county area. In fact, just this week we've had a story about how doctors at Dayton Children's separated conjoined twins.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, do you see that? And I was amazed. Kayla McDermott, our reporter, went to do the story, and I said, I don't remember them ever separating conjoined twins before. I always thought it was, you know, a bigger city hospital like maybe, you know, Pittsburgh or even Columbus or Cincinnati. And she did ask about that and was told that they had done separations of conjoined twins before, but not at the head. There's some fancy word for it, cranial something or other,
right.
You know. So that was very unique. And I, you know, I'm sure they had doubts about whether it would be successful, which I think is why we're just now finding out that the surgery took place last year and that all this had been going on for 2 years as doctors figured out how to best separate these two boys from Guatemala. So quite a story. But, yeah, it really makes me proud of Dayton Children's. And actually, my dad worked at Children's years ago. He'd gotten out of the Air Force, and he was trained as an X-ray technician. And he retired as a senior master sergeant, so he went to Children's, which I think was still called Barney's then,
yeah,
and he ran
yeah.
the X-ray department and later went on to Miami Valley Hospital before he fully retired. But so I always felt like I had some attachment to Children's Hospital, and I'm, you know, it's really grown, and it's, you know, for anybody who has a sick child or grandchild or, you know, kid gets hurt, you know, they do wonderful work over there.
You know, being a part of the muscular dystrophy telethon when I was at 22, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, Don Brown did a great job over
uh-huh.
there. You guys did a great
he did.
Job. And but do you I remember seeing those kids just like you.
Mm-hmm.
And do you
yeah.
ever stay in touch with any of them? Did any of them come up to say, hi, I was at Children's, you did this for us?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes you will run into somebody or I'll see them on Facebook. There's a young man named Devin Ely who was born with, I'm not sure exactly what his condition, but you know, he still uses crutches, but he's graduated from college and he's working. And some of the others have become nurses. They've gone into healthcare themselves because of, they're so grateful for the care that they received, and they admired the people who still admire the people who cared for them and helped to make them well. So yeah, sometimes you hear from them or their parents. It's quite a community of ambassadors, you know, who really are so grateful to the people at Children's Hospital.
Well, Cheryl, I know you're strapped for time, so I want to thank you for coming on and doing this. And one more question: Have you seen the new football stadium over at Carroll yet?
I haven't. I'll have to get over there. I am emceeing their Distinguished Alumni Hall of Fame in September, but it's not at the high school. So yeah, I'm gonna have to get over there. But Carroll's done a lot of expansion since I was a student there many moons ago, and I'm very proud to be a Carroll Patriot and proud of what the people have done to keep that school going and thriving and growing.
Well, once again, thank you for coming on and doing this and sharing some of the stories with us, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Okay. Thanks, Doug, for having me. I appreciate you.
We'll be back with more right after this.
No matter the threat or where the front line may be, our armed forces protect and defend us every day. But what does it take to strengthen our service members and keep them focused on the mission? What does it take to keep our military connected to family, home, and country? It takes a force. Be a force behind the forces. Join the USO in helping service members and their families. Give today at csohio.uso.org.
Profiler, Inc., your local source for custom graphics, including banners, decals, and custom apparel for your corporate, school, or personal needs. For more information, check us out on the web at www.profilerinc.com or on our Facebook page, Profiler, Inc.
It's me, your heart. High blood pressure is serious, and if you think I'm just going to keep ticking away, you're wrong. I can quit whenever I want, but I like my job. Just treat me better. Maybe we can do some exercise on occasion? After all, we're in this together.
Don't let your heart quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Back here on GCSN Reports, Doug Brown with you, and I want to thank Cheryl McHenry for coming on and being our guest here on GCSN Reports. And you can catch Cheryl every Monday through Friday on their 90 Minutes of News on WHIO TV Channel 7, beginning at 5 p.m. And coming up here on GCSN in the future, we will have three athletic directors whose stadiums are being renovated, and I mean renovated big time. The Dayton Public Schools and West Welcome Stadium, their big renovation. It's almost completed, I believe. But we're going to talk to Victoria Jones about that. We're going to talk to Nathan Kopp, who is the athletic director or director of athletics at Xenia. And they took their entire stadium down. I mean, they imploded that thing, and they're rebuilding everything. And from some of the pictures I've seen, it really looks nice. And also Scott Molfender from Carroll High School, they're redoing their home side and putting up a new press box. And so that we're going to talk to him about that, and other little tidbits going on. And later on this week, we'll talk to Tim Streed, who is the media director for the Ohio High School Athletic Association. We're going to talk to him about the new rules for both for all the sports that are coming up here, that are starting today, as a matter of fact. The golf is starting today. Stick around here on GCSN Reports. We're going to have a lot of stuff going on, and then coming up on August the 18th, we start our coverage of high school football as the Greenview Rams take on the Northridge Polar Bears from Northridge Stadium in Dayton. So until then, this is Doug Brown saying so long. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Gem City Sports Network. You've been listening to GCSN Reports. Today's show has been brought to you by Profiler Performance Products, by Don Brown Sports Apparel, a big league look for a minor league price, by McAfee Heating and Air, any season, anytime, McAfee, by Profiler Inc., by the USO, by a Special Wish Foundation of Dayton and Southwest Ohio, by Darren Dollar Music, and by the Gem City Sports Network, your source for local sports in the Miami Valley, the Gem City Sports Network. Join us next time for GCSN Reports right here on the Gem City Sports Network.